Good morning. May I reserve 3 minutes, please? May it please the court, my name is Morgan Edrington, and I represent the appellant in this matter. This is a case where there is a genuine issue of material fact as to the election of a residual beneficiary under the Tacoma Employees Retirement System. The trial court dismissed on summary judgment despite this genuine issue of material fact. Mr. Cunningham had one daughter. She was the beneficiary of his estate for 30 years. That estate plan remained unchanged. Consistent with his estate plan, he designated his estate as the beneficiary of his retirement benefits when he applied for retirement from the city. Mr. Cunningham had been an employee since 1989. He contributed to the city retirement plan throughout his employment. He retired on January 1st of 2013 and died by suicide on February 10th of 2013, just a month or so after his retirement. The city now says that because he marked the box unmodified, his estate is to receive no residual benefits from his retirement plan. The problem, however, is that the form that the city relies on is inherently in conflict and ambiguous. The form, while it has the marked unmodified box, also designates as to the beneficiaries of the retirement plan the estate.
Is this form different than the forms that are used by other municipalities and jurisdictions with similar retirement plans?
I don't know the answer to that question, Your Honor, but I think what's instructive here is that this form was presented to Mr. Cunningham in his application for retirement, and the line indicating the beneficiary of his retirement interests is also consistent with the information he received prior to his retirement. Every year during his employment, he received an annual statement that summarized not only his contributions, but reminded him that he had no beneficiary designation selected at the time. And the annual statements that he received said, should you not select a beneficiary, your estate is the default beneficiary.
All right, but when you go to retire, you select what kind of payment stream you're going to get, whether it's all for you or a lesser amount, and there's some residual that may go to a survivor, or that some, if you haven't received benefits equal to the amount of your contribution, some can go to your estate. On the other hand, no matter which one you select, if you die during the month, there's part of that month's payment that goes somewhere else. How would you change this form, keep it on one page, and deal with both of those scenarios?
I think there's two problems, Your Honor. The form is inconsistent in that the portion relating to the beneficiaries presumes that there is some residual benefit for beneficiaries. It does.
Isn't there always the piece of the month?
The prorated portion?
Yes.
I believe that's possible unless, you know, by chance you die on the exact day
of
the payment.
You don't die on the last day of the month.
Of course, but the form should be more clear and should avoid the conflict of saying the estate would receive any additional benefits. And I think the plain...
Should we look at the other documents that Mr. Cunningham had available to him at the same time he signed this and evaluating whether this is ambiguous?
I think that the problem with that is that the trier of fact was making a determination as to credibility of the witnesses of the city as well as the meaning of the documents in front of Mr. Cunningham and presupposing what he understood those documents to be.
That telling to me that you don't hand up the other document that he looked at the same time, that you only hand one up. Why is that?
I think what's important is that those documents are part of the record, but this is the most illustrative document of the record that shows the inconsistency.
Did he sign more than one document on the same day he signed this document?
According to the city, he received pamphlets, and this was his application for retirement that he submitted in conjunction, and there's a second page that shows that he was applying for retirement on January 1st. And when you look at the...
Does he sign anything that elects what kind of benefit he's going to get on retirement?
The city purports that this document does that with the unmodified box. But when you look at the plain language of unmodified, that can mean unchanged. For every year of Mr. Cunningham's employment, he received a statement that informed him his estate was the beneficiary of his retirement benefits. Without further explanation on this form, without any other identifying information, Mr. Cunningham was led to believe that unchanged and estate could be the beneficiary. And
how do you know that's what he believed?
I think that that's a problem with this case, Your Honor, and that the city has backfilled that information with the declaration that has been stricken by the trial court. And I would like to briefly address that issue. The declaration was stricken under the dead man's statute.
What evidence do you have affirmatively of what he believed?
The only evidence that the estate can offer is the contradictory and ambiguous form that Mr. Cunningham received.
Who has the burden of persuasion as to what Mr. Cunningham thought was going to happen?
The estate will have the burden of persuasion. The problem is this case was dismissed on summary judgment.
But what evidence do you have at trial that he had an intent different than that expressed in the documents as asserted by the city?
His intent can be inferred from his 30-year estate plan in which he left everything to his daughter, his only heir. He was not married at the time. She was the heir and the heir of intestacy of a non-probate asset and the beneficiary under his will. He left every piece, every non-probate and every probate asset to his daughter, and indicating estate would be consistent with that testamentary intent. I think briefly,
he wanted the biggest amount he could get for himself during retirement. At the time he signed these documents, he hadn't contemplated suicide.
I think it would be inconsistent to say that he intended to leave nothing for his daughter at the time he's retiring and contemplating suicide.
Well, couldn't you say, I'm going to leave everything I've got to my daughter, but I'm not going to diminish the amount that I have to spend for myself during my lifetime to the benefit of my daughter?
And that would be an inference for the finder of fact to determine.
Why isn't that an equally competing inference, which would mean you don't have evidence that creates a material issue of fact?
I think that the finder of fact should make the determination as to what Mr. Cunningham intended, whether he intended to maximize his one check he received before his suicide or maximize the benefit he was leaving to his daughter. And on summary judgment, it would be improper for the trial court to make that determination and to weigh the evidence.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, my name is Margaret Elifson, and I represent the City of Tacoma. And this is a rather straightforward case. Mr. Cunningham chose to retire. He followed the process set up by the City of Tacoma, which is you ask for an estimate of your retirement benefits. This is a defined benefit plan. Therefore, your retirement, the employee's retirement payment, is going to be based on their years of service and the amount of the salary. So the employee goes in, asks for an estimate. It's calculated according to what the employee says he wants to do with it. Mr. Cunningham, in this case, said, I have no dependents and nobody I want to give it to. So his estimate came back with 5 of the 8 options filled out. Mr. Cunningham then moved forward with retirement and made an appointment to come into the TERS office, Tacoma Employee Retirement System office, and he sat down with a retirement counselor. Also, when he had gotten his estimate, the estimate gave an explanation of each of the plans available to him, and under unmodified, it very clearly stated no after-death benefits to anybody.
So your argument on appeal is that the unmodified language in what was just handed up to us was essentially what you just said, that
it
he
is.
Did not wish anything left over after he died.
Correct. Unmodified goes to the type of plan.
Is there some disputed evidence about whether he actually received that document?
No. No, there's no dispute about that. And I think they're trying to tie the word unmodified to the annual statement that goes to every employee. Every employee contributes to the retirement plan. It's mandatory. And while you're still an employee, active employee, you have access to those funds should you choose to leave. And so you can look at that and you can see, or if you die while still employed, that's where it's going to go. Everything changes once you sign that retirement contract. At that point, your retirement funds go into the unsegregated pool. At that point, and that's why all our documents and all documents regarding these defined benefit plans say, choose carefully, it's irrevocable.
The form also uses estate, that apparently is the argument here. What is your understanding of the insertion of the word estate under beneficiary designation on the form that was just passed up to it?
It's consistent with all the testimony in this case, which is Marnie Moore, the retirement counselor, as she sat down and spent 90 minutes going over all this with Mr. Cunningham, said, you've chosen unmodified. They've marked the box, unmodified, and explained to him the pro rata amount in the month of your death has to go somewhere. We'll just put estate. That way it'll go to your bank because you have no beneficiaries designated. Unmodified had nothing to do with the beneficiaries that might have been entitled to take had he died while still in service, had he died prior to entering the retirement system. Your Honor's also asked whether or not there was any other form that was filled out and signed by Mr. Cunningham. The only other form is the checklist that's gone through during that 90-minute conference. You'll note that the second topic on that list, selection of retirement option, Ms. Moore fills that as they go through it. She's selected unmodified on that form. Mr. Cunningham signed that at the end saying, yes, all these things have been discussed with me. So that's the second document. There's no question but that all the information available to him and given to him said an unmodified, which is your straight, in some jurisdictions it's called the straight retirement option, which is the old-fashioned, you get a payment for the rest of your life. Then they came up, sorry.
The sentence that's below the beneficiary designation, there's a paragraph of, I guess it's two sentences. It says, your primary beneficiary will receive any monies in your account at the time of your death. Shouldn't that say, comma, unless you select the unmodified plan?
Is Your Honor looking at...
I'm looking at this paragraph.
Yes,
right,
okay.
Here, the second sentence.
If he had designated a primary beneficiary.
Well, he designated the estate as his primary beneficiary, but that beneficiary isn't going to receive any monies in your account because the monies in his account have been transferred to the common pool when he elects the unmodified plan, correct?
Well, if you look at the designation of primary beneficiary, there's nothing checked there. That's the estate. There's no question that the word estate was written in there by Marnie Moore.
Well, doesn't that have to be the beneficiary designation box above that says you must designate at least one primary beneficiary? That's the only beneficiary he designated, and since he's been told he has to designate a primary beneficiary. Isn't that what that is?
Well, except that would be in conflict with the unmodified, which says there are no beneficiaries that will receive any amounts after your death other than the pro rata amount.
So were there any monies in his account at the time of his death?
There is no account at the time of his death because it's all gone. It's unlike a defined contribution plan where you can actually access a particular account.
What about the money, the pro rata money? Where is that?
That's from his... the amount he's been pledged will be returned to him. So with a defined benefit plan, at the time of retirement, all of your contributions go into this unsegregated pool.
I understand that. But
you get the
pro rata amount, that doesn't go into his account or anywhere else. That actually stays in the main, general pool until it's paid out, and then it goes where?
That's the residual of his monthly pension account, and that goes into the bank. Or whatever his wherever his estate.
Once he elects unmodified plan, he has no account into which any monies are held at any point in time.
Correct. Not for him specifically. There is a huge fund, but
why isn't this ambiguous then? If it allows you to select unmodified, but doesn't qualify this phrase about any monies in your account to make it clear that you don't have an account.
That might have been explained to him during the 90-minute conference, but really what we're talking...
The record that it was?
What was?
That it was explained to him that he would not have any account after he signed the agreement selecting unmodified.
I'm not sure that they explained to him the difference between a defined benefit plan and a defined contribution plan, because it's...
Did they explain to him he wouldn't have any account that, to which this paragraph could apply?
Well, maybe I didn't make myself clear. The only account it applies to is to if you have a bank account that you, where the estate's, the last payment can go, that's where they'll place it. If the
we're talking about, he has an account to which his contributions go and they accumulate and earn interest during the course of his employment.
Correct.
When he signs that retirement agreement and elects unmodified, all of the monies in that account get transferred to the general pool and he no longer has an account. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Where does he learn that?
I don't know that he ever learns that. I don't know that it's relevant to him.
Does he
need what he's contracted
that?
No.
Why
he's
not?
Because what he's contracted for, what these retirement plans are defined benefits. What he's contracted for.
I understand what they all are, but how does he know that that's what's happening to him if the form he's signing says that the beneficiary receive any monies in his account? He knows he's had an account unless somebody tells him, you know, you don't have an account anymore after this.
It's explained to him in the form that from now on, what happens is you get a benefit every month, and you get to select what that benefit is for the rest. And you've chosen one that gives the full amount to you for the rest of your life. You have not designated any primary beneficiaries or any beneficiaries, and which would be, frankly, inconsistent with the unmodified plan you've chosen. And the trial court was right. There's absolutely no evidence he got anything other than what he wanted. 20% of employees choose this account. It's a very popular plan, particularly for an unmarried single man. The fact is this man died by his own hand, but it wouldn't have mattered if he had gotten in a car wreck the next day. He chose to get the maximum amount for the rest of his life. And that's exactly what he got. There's no evidence he was misled, that he relied on any misleading or false information, or got anything other than exactly what he wanted.
The bulk of the evidence that the city relies upon was stricken at the trial court. The testimony as to what was told to Mr. Cunningham during this consultation was stricken. The city's cross-appeal was untimely, and that should not be considered. The retirement conference that Mr. Cunningham...
We don't have any testimony from... testimony from the city's employees was stricken.
Correct.
We don't have any testimony regarding Mr. Cunningham's intent. There's nothing there. The only thing we have to go on then are these documents. And I need you to explain to me why these documents create a material issue of fact about how Mr. Cunningham was misled or deceived.
These documents create a genuine issue of material fact as to the contractual relationship between the employer and the employee for retirement benefit.
But you're alleging negligent and intentional misrepresentation, are you not?
As one of the claims, yes, Your Honor. And there's also a breach of contract claim.
I understand that. And so what was the false statement that was made to Mr. Cunningham?
I think that a finder of fact can find that the false statement regarding his residual amounts in his account that could go to his estate or to his designated beneficiary arise from these forms and the information.
What's the evidence that you're relying on? Is it just the text of the forms?
The nature of this circumstance, yes. The bulk of the evidence arises from his...
It's not relying on any affirmative statement that any employee of the city of Tacoma made to Mr. Cunningham.
We are not. It is his estate plan and the bulk of the information that he received in documents through his lifetime, as well as through his estate planning or his retirement consultation with the city. If you look at the totality of the circumstances, it creates a genuine issue of material fact as to the contractual ambiguities relating to his retirement plan.
So are ambiguities and making a false statement the same thing in your mind, you think?
No, but I think that the alternative claims can support a cause of action that should go to the trier of fact.
So the breach of contract claim.
I think that is a claim that should survive, yes. And when you look at the contractual ambiguities and you construe those in against the drafter, the city, there is a finder of fact that could find as a reasonable inference that Mr. Cunningham intended his estate to be the beneficiary of his residual benefits. And with that evidence, even if the court were to consider the stricken testimony of the city employee, you look at the ambiguities of the document itself, and on its face, it is contradictory and ambiguous enough that a finder of fact could make that determination.